Welcome to the Laura's House podcast series. During this podcast, we'll be speaking with Adam Dodge, a legal advocate here at Laura's House, about what victims of domestic violence should know about obtaining a restraining order. Please note that the material covered in this podcast is state-specific and relates only to restraining orders in California. In this first part, we'll define abuse, police involvement, emergency protective orders, and temporary restraining orders. Please note that Laura's House is not a law firm, and this information is meant only as a resource. The information contained in this podcast is not intended to serve as legal advice or as a guarantee, warranty, or a prediction regarding any outcome of a particular legal matter. It's recommended that you consult with local domestic violence resources or an attorney before filing a restraining order. Thank you, Adam, for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to begin by asking, what is considered domestic violence in the eyes of the law?
Well, under the technical definition, domestic violence means to hit, kick, hurt, scare, throw things, pull hair, push, follow, harass, sexually assault, or threaten to do any of these things, and it can be spoken, written, or physical. It is important to remember that abuse doesn't have to be physical to be considered domestic violence.
What kind of immediate protection is available to those victims of domestic violence?
First, you have to use common sense. If you are in danger or the abuse is life-threatening, call 911. That is the quickest and most effective way to get protection.
What should a person tell the 911 operator?
Tell the operator what happened, who caused the injuries or property damage, if threats or weapons were involved, if there have been any threats or violence before, if there were witnesses, or anything else you feel is important.
Do you have any suggestions for dealing with the police?
Definitely. There are some important things for a victim to remember when the police arrive, which can be difficult since it's usually a very traumatic and hectic time, that will help in obtaining a restraining order and will protect the victim at the time of the incident. First, alert the responding officer to any weapons and ask that they be taken away. Second, make a report. This can be done hours or even days after the incident, but it's best to get it done immediately. Third, ask the police to take pictures of any injuries or property damage. In the alternative, have someone else take pictures also. Photographic evidence is critical in restraining order cases. Finally, make sure to get an information card from the police officer that includes the incident report number and the officer's name and badge number. These are all important steps to ensure a victim's safety and to assist in obtaining a restraining order later if necessary.
Can the police responding to the 911 call give a victim a restraining order?
Yes. You can ask the police officer for an emergency protective order, and it is designed to give a victim of domestic violence immediate protection following the incident.
What kind of protection does an emergency protective order provide?
Well, specifically, it can order the abusive person to stay away from the victim and the victim's children, make custody orders, and order the abusive person to move out.
How long does an emergency protective order last?
It can last up to 7 days. If a victim requires a more permanent order, they should start the restraining order process by obtaining a temporary restraining order before the emergency protective order expires or within 30 days of the last incident of abuse. Also, moving forward, I will refer to the person filing for the restraining order as the petitioner and the other party as the respondent. This is how they are identified in the court paperwork.
Why does someone need to file for a temporary restraining order if they really want a restraining order?
I know it sounds a bit confusing, but it's part of the process set up in the court system. The petitioner is really filing a request for a restraining order, but the court will always begin with the temporary restraining order process.
It is a little confusing. Can you give us an overview of the whole process?
Sure. We can discuss the nuts and bolts of temporary restraining orders and restraining orders in more detail later, but in general, the process is as follows. First, you file the necessary paperwork to request a restraining order at the clerk's office at the courthouse. You will typically find out that day or at the latest the following business day if your request is granted or denied. If granted, a temporary restraining order will be issued. Either way, a restraining order hearing will then be scheduled where both parties are required to appear before a judge who will determine whether or not to grant or deny the restraining order. If the temporary restraining order is granted, it will stay in force until the restraining order hearing.
So it sounds like a temporary restraining order is a quick solution for individuals who need immediate protection while waiting for the restraining order hearing.
Exactly. Basically, an emergency protective order provides an individual protection and time to file and obtain a temporary restraining order. And the temporary restraining order provides protection until the restraining order hearing.
Okay. Are there any other differences between temporary restraining orders and restraining orders?
Well, the main difference is how long they are enforced. But substantively, they are pretty much identical. The petitioner is simply asking the judge to make the relief requested in the temporary restraining order into a permanent order. However, a judge can always make changes in a permanent order after listening to testimony at the hearing and reviewing new evidence.
When you say permanent order, does that mean that it can last indefinitely?
No. The maximum time frame is 5 years, but you can get that extended.
How do you go about getting it extended?
The petitioner can ask the court to extend the restraining order even if there has been no new domestic violence or abuse. But be sure to file a request to renew the restraining order before the original order expires.
Now let's talk about who can file for a domestic violence restraining order, what protections the order provides, and how a person obtains a restraining order.
So, to begin, there are two prerequisites to filing a domestic violence restraining for a domestic violence restraining order. First, you need to have been the victim of either actual physical violence, such as molesting, attacking, striking, or battering, stalking, sexual assault, a serious threat of violence, harassing or annoying phone calls, text messages, or emails, or even destruction of personal property. Second, one of the following must be true. You are married or were formerly married to the other person. You have or formerly had a dating relationship with the other party. You and the other party have a child or children together. You are related by blood, marriage, or adoption. For example, mother, father, child, brother, sister, grandparent, or even in-law. Or you and the other party are living together or formally live together as members of a, quote, household.
What if someone doesn't meet the relationship prerequisite but still needs protection?
Well, one option is a civil harassment restraining order. Another is an order to stop elder or dependent adult abuse. The forms for both are available at courtinfo.ca.gov. along with instructions on how to file.
So now that we know who should get one, what exactly is a domestic violence restraining order?
It is a legally enforceable court order that protects the petitioner and any other qualifying individuals included in the request, like children, by ordering the respondent to do and not do certain things.
What can be included in the order?
Well, it depends on the situation, but some of the most common protections are personal conduct orders. This is where the court orders the restrained person not to contact, assault, or harass, physically or verbally, anyone protected by the order. There are also stay-away orders. This is where the restrained person can be ordered to stay away from the victim, the children, their home, workplace, schools, car, or anywhere else that the petitioner or their children frequents. There are also move-out orders. This is where the restrained person can be forced to move out of the joint residence. Child custody and child support orders can be included in a restraining order. The petitioner can be allowed to record unlawful communications, which is very useful in documenting and preventing verbal abuse, by the way. Property control can be ordered, giving the petitioner sole control over things like cars and pets. Or the court can require the respondent to enter a 52-week batterer intervention program.
There are a lot of different protections that can be included, but how does the petitioner enforce that order? For example, what if the respondent shows up at the house?
Okay. Here is where the common sense topic that we discussed earlier really comes into play. In reality, a restraining order is just a piece of paper. If you are in danger or the restrained person is violating the terms of the order, call the police and rely on your safety plan. When a restraining order is issued, temporary or otherwise, it is logged in CLETS, which stands for California Law Enforcement Telecommunications System, and means the police will have access to the terms of the order. However, make sure you keep a copy of the order at home, in your car, at work, or anywhere else you spend a lot of time to show the police. This will assist them in stopping the restrained person from violating the order and, in some cases, arrest them.
Now that we've covered who can get a restraining order and what it includes, can you describe in more detail how an individual goes about obtaining a restraining order?
Definitely. Here is where some of the differences between temporary and permanent restraining orders come up. After domestic violence has occurred, the petitioner can file the necessary paperwork at the clerk's office at the court. The petitioner will likely be directed to wait while the clerk gives the paperwork to the judge to review, after which the judge will either grant or deny the request for restraining order, usually the same day, but definitely by the next business day. Either way, the paperwork will be returned to the individual by the clerk, and a court hearing for the permanent restraining order will be set, usually within 3 weeks. Sometimes the judge may have some questions, but typically the petitioner will only deal with the clerk at this stage.
Does the other party need to be there?
Well, the court understands that individuals may have concerns for their safety if she or he had to notify the other party of their intention to file for a restraining order. So the court does give the option of filing without notifying the other party if the petitioner believes doing so would put them in harm's way. It is not uncommon for the other party not to receive notice. However, where appropriate, the court would prefer that notice be provided to the other party. And I should mention, this is one of the main differences between temporary and permanent orders. Unlike temporary restraining orders, you cannot get around notifying the other party of the permanent restraining order hearing.
So how do you give notice to the other party regarding the restraining order hearing?
You must provide notice to the respondent by having them served with the necessary paperwork by someone that is not protected by the order and who is 18 years of age or older. The sheriff will do this for free, but you need to schedule service with your local sheriff's office in advance.
How much notice do you need to provide for the temporary restraining order if you do decide to give notice?
You need to give them at least 4 hours notice, and it can be verbal or written.
You mentioned previously the necessary paperwork when filing for a restraining order. Where can someone get help completing and filing that paperwork?
Well, luckily, there are many options. If you have access to the Internet, you can go to the Orange County Court website at occourts.org and follow the self-help links for restraining orders. They will provide you with printable forms to file and answers to frequently asked questions. If you are outside of Orange County, you should consult with your local court's website. Most courts also provide assistance as well. For example, the Domestic Violence Assistance Program Office at Lamoureux Justice Center in Orange will assist people in completing and filing the forms. Also, pro bono, meaning no cost, legal services may be available through the Public Law Center, the Legal Aid Society of Orange County, and the Orange County Bar Association. Also in Orange County, nonprofit organizations like Laura's House or Human Options provide legal advocacy support and will sometimes accompany victims to court. Finally, you can hire an attorney. Contact your local county bar website for a list of attorneys.
Does it cost anything to file for a restraining order?
No, there is no charge to file.
Can you submit evidence when applying for a restraining order?
Definitely. In fact, it is a very good idea. Be sure to clearly document the incidents of domestic violence, including the dates of each incident, in a written statement called a declaration that you'll be filing along with your paperwork. Also, at the time of filing, be sure to attach any evidence to support your statements. If you are unable to do so at that time, please make sure to at least bring evidence with you to the hearing. Supporting evidence can include police report case numbers, photos of injuries or property damage, phone records, witness statements, or anything else related to the incident. It's your word against the other party, so supporting evidence is critical to establishing your case. Again, make sure to bring copies of everything with you to your hearing, even if you've already filed them with the clerk.
Speaking of the hearing, what can a victim expect to happen there, assuming they don't have an attorney?
Well, there are several things to keep in mind. First, the date, time, and courtroom number will be listed on the face page of the filed order. Make sure you get there a little early. If the time is listed at 8:30 a.m., this means your matter is scheduled for the morning calendar, and yours is one of several matters before the judge that day. Your case could be heard anytime between 8:30 a.m. and noon, and you could even get continued to the afternoon. When you arrive, check the sheet on the door to the courtroom to be sure your case is listed. When the courtroom is opened up by the bailiff, check in with the bailiff and let him know that you are present. If you need an interpreter, let the bailiff know and they will provide one. Then take a seat and wait for the judge to call your case. If you can, be sure to dress in business or formal attire if possible. Keep your phone off and don't text or use your phone while in court. Be respectful and wait patiently. When your case is called, you will be called up and sworn in, and then the judge will hear your case. He or she will ask you if you are ready to proceed, and thereafter may ask questions of both parties about the statements and the paperwork filed, and may ask you if you have anything to add. By the way, the responding party has the right to request a continuance at the first hearing for any reason, so don't be alarmed if this happens. The temporary restraining order, if granted, will remain in place until the next hearing. Following the hearing, the judge will ask you to remain in the courtroom while the orders are prepared. This can take some time as the court is usually very, very busy, so be patient.
What if they are concerned that the other party is going to cause some trouble outside the courthouse or once they're inside?
We always recommend attending the hearing in the company of a friend, family member, attorney, or an advocate from a nonprofit like Laura's House. There are law enforcement officers stationed all over the courthouse, so alert them immediately if you feel that you are in danger. Be smart, use common sense, and be aware of your surroundings.
Earlier, you mentioned the importance of bringing a police report or case number to your hearing. What if the other party is arrested? Do you still need a restraining order?
Whether the other party has been arrested or not should not affect your decision to obtain a restraining order. Proceed as planned. If the other party is in jail, he or she can still make an appearance.
What if there is a criminal protection order?
You can have both. A criminal protective order is a separate order requested by the district attorney and issued by a judge in a criminal court to protect a witness or a victim of a crime. It is similar to a domestic violence restraining order in that it tells the restrained person to stay away from and to not hurt, threaten, or communicate with the other person. However, it does not include a lot of the other protections provided by the domestic violence restraining order, which is why it's a good idea to have both.
What if you're married or in the middle of a divorce? Can you use a restraining order to start a divorce?
All the same rules apply, but typically the restraining order hearing will be presided over by the judge handling the divorce. You also need to note in one of the forms that you file that there is a separate divorce case. And no, you cannot use a restraining order to start the divorce process.
What if the petitioner wants to cancel the restraining order?
Only a judge can cancel the restraining order. And a request for dismissal must be filed for the judge to do so. On the other hand, a temporary restraining order will typically be dismissed if the petitioner does not attend the restraining order hearing, and then the whole process will have to be restarted. This also raises a very good point. The protected person in a restraining order should be very, very careful about initiating contact with the restrained person when no contact has been ordered, as it may give the restrained person grounds to have the order dismissed.
Adam, do you have any other tips for us?
The Orange County Courts website, occourts.org, is a great resource. A person can get self-help information and guidance, download forms, check and even check the status of their case, and view what documents have been filed. I would also encourage victims of domestic violence to call our hotline at Laura's House for more information on local resources at 866-498-1511, or they can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233.
Thank you again, Adam, for sharing this information on restraining orders. To learn more about Laura's House, or if you're a victim of domestic violence and want protection for yourself or for your children from further violence, you can log on to our website at www.laurashouse.org or call our 24-hour hotline at area code 949-498-1511 or our toll-free number at area code 866-498-1511. Thanks so much for joining me today, Adam.
It was my pleasure.